Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
All right. You guys ready? Awesome. All right. Welcome to another episode of Boots, Balls, and Bras. This is our episode 7 of season 2, and we've got a really special one because we are here today at Harris Academy in Bermondsey, and we have a live audience. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Hey. All right. I'm going to hand over to Eartha because it was your idea to bring us here today for this week, which is International Women's Day week. What are you, Earth?
Yeah, amazing. And it's great to be here. As Beck said, we've got a very special week this week. It's about celebrating women and looking at all the great initiatives that are happening up and down the country. Really, we want to sort of kick off around looking at how we can link that to the legacy of what's happened with the Lionesses in the summer and how well that went. But I thought it was really important to bring it back to sort of grassroots football and really what does that really look like on the ground in terms of the girls that we're trying to inspire to get involved in the game. And we're really talking about a game for all. It's not just about participating. It's about the different jobs that you can get within the game, whether that's refereeing or coaching. And I thought it'd be good to kick it with educators who are there to help sort of supervise those girls and help them navigate those pathways, but also hear a little bit more from the girls themselves. So we're going to get into that as well as doing some roundups of, obviously we had the Conti Cup this weekend, WSL, so we've got some results to go over in terms of that as well. So I guess we're not going to waste any more time, and we're going to introduce the amazing Kashana Kelly, who is the PE teacher here at Harris Bermondsey and also head of year 7, and really just hear about what does the legacy mean for her in terms of her work and educating the next generation, and what does that look like in terms of her career as a former player and coach as well. So over to you, Kashana.
Thank you, Eartha, and thank you guys. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Feel honoured to be on this table at the BBB crew. thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. And yeah, what an important week. I think the legacy is huge. It's, you know, we want to try and build on that momentum, and we want to try and make the next generation of young people, we want to try and make it a little bit easier for them to navigate their way through their journey playing football. I mean, on the ground here in school, some of the things that, you know, would be helpful for us is, you know, they have access to the sport, to football throughout the day. We're quite fortunate that we're an all girls secondary school, and some of the barriers that some other schools might have where it's not on the curriculum football, or it might not be here as an enrichment club. We don't have that. We're fortunate in that aspect. So we've got football at after school. We've got it in our curriculum for about 7 weeks of the term of the year. So that is a good thing. That's a plus for us here.
And just on that, obviously the FA have the, and Barclays have the biggest ever football session happening tomorrow for International Women's Day. We've already had 200,000 girls signed up to take part in that. And I know for you guys, it's just something that you do. So it's part of, you'll be part of that anyway. What do initiatives like that actually mean in reality? Is it just a one-off thing, or actually does there need to be more in terms of the rest of the year and actually going forward rather than this one-off day and this one-off initiative?
I think, yeah, good question. I think it should definitely be not a one-off thing. It should be a reoccurring thing. Someone like the FA running that initiative is huge, right? Mm-hmm. So I think if that was more frequent throughout the year, I think that you'd encourage more young people to get involved, encourage teachers, coaches to get that going. Yeah, because like for us, we've gone from a place where we sometimes have 30, 40 to kids at enrichment clubs. Mm-hmm. So that's a normal thing for us.
And I guess just on that, I think for me, I always try to look at what are the things that stop the other girls from taking part in those sessions? So you mentioned that it's an all-girls school, so you have about 900 here in terms of your cohort. You have numbers in terms of 30 or 50 out of that accessing. For me, what are the barriers in terms of other girls taking part in those sessions? I don't know if Bex or Farah want to mention about maybe stuff that they sort of went through and if it's still, we're still seeing the same things with your girls. So
I just think maybe some of the experiences I had in school or even working in as a coach coming into a school was more that the qualifications within the teaching system, they weren't educated around football, so therefore wouldn't teach the lesson.
Yep.
Do you reckon it's that's dependent on schools, whether if they're interested in a sport, it's probably more driven in schools?
100%. 100%. When I started here about 8 years ago, the 3G pitch was just a concrete surface, and luckily the principal
used to cut out my legs that
got concrete surface, and then I was here for maybe 2 years and it turned into a 3G pitch because there was a need for it. The girls love football, and because I could be considered as a expert in football coaching, because that's my background. I've come from being a football coach, so there's a need, you know, the teacher's driven, teacher wants to do football, so then the kids sort of follow suit.
100%. I can vouch for that as a teacher. I always delivered the football syllabus when being a PE teacher. Dance wasn't happening because you had to take your shoes off and I didn't want to touch the dirty floor. So I used to swap over in terms of that. Bex, what about for you? Is it different in terms of like school and enrichment and access to football? How was that internationally? It'd be good to hear.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, Shantan. So if you don't have a teacher who likes football, does that mean that there's potentially no opportunity for girls to learn football in this country? Is that
unfortunately that is a yes. Wow. That is definitely a barrier. Yeah. If the teacher's not skilled or not interested, then you know, it's unlikely. It's more unlikely they're going to put on that extra enrichment and drive it forward and be committed.
Because back to, I grew up in, I was born in LA. Does anyone know where that is? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. And so in school, we had all of the different sports. We had basketball and swimming and football and, well, we call it soccer. But then actually outside of that, we had a lot of different clubs. So girls had access to any, you know, football. You could play AYSO, which is anyone can play, or you could go to a club where then it's pay to play. So we really had no barriers to playing soccer. But also soccer is an American sport for girls, for women, because of the U.S. women's national team. You guys maybe know. So it is totally different vibe. So, yeah, for me, it's like, it's one of the things being here, living here for the last 5 years, that feels like that can't be possible.
You know, the open letter that obviously the Lionesses, they want their legacy to carry on through the success in the Euros. That open letter going to a government and whatever for it to be compulsory within schools, equal access for girls and boys, that still won't happen because of the qualifications, I guess, of the teachers within them schools. Because that was, I went to two different senior schools and that was one barrier. One school was heavy on football. They had male teachers that were really driven by football. The other school had male and female PE teachers but wasn't interested in football, so it never happened for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a shame. So I think the next thing that we can look at, what we should be looking at to alleviate that barrier, is getting skilled coaches in to deliver those sessions for those girls. Because why should they miss out just because the teacher's skill set is not that sport? You know.
Yeah.
But is that a reality?
Because obviously
we look at school budgets and they're already stretching in terms of energy costs and staffing. Like, is that going to be a priority in terms of actually let's make sure that they get to do football, or they get to that it's even important for me. It has to be a core subject on the curriculum where it's not a recommendation that they have 2 hours. Actually, these are core aspects that should be embedded within teaching, because it benefits their well-being. It gets them to be up and about and not sitting behind a desk. It gets them to learn new skills, and there's loads of other life skills that you can get from it. So it's all great having that letter, but what does that realistically look like in reality? And touching on what you said, Bex, in terms of accessing football, even from a primary school level, like, it used to be used as a punishment. So teachers who don't like doing phys ed, if the kid mess up, they're like, okay, we're not going outside today.
Yeah.
We're staying
in
and doing
that. That would have been like my personal hell.
I promise you, that's like, hands up if anyone had that in primary.
No, every single one of you girls is raising
their
hand.
Even senior, never mind just primary. I had senior school too. Like, I went playing in the playground at
so
lunch
punishment
break.
Was you couldn't play in the playground?
Yeah. Because the teachers were not confident in teaching it. So they're usually like...
They wanted wanted to punish you anyway.
100%. They wanted, but yeah. It was cold. They usually specialize in like maybe English maths or whatever, normal subjects. And then to go out and now have to put trainers on and do a sport for them, it's a bit scary.
So that's a question that I have. So in the US, we have physical education teachers, and I assumed it was the same here. Do you have teachers that are primarily trained in physical education and whereby they would then learn basketball rules, volleyball rules, soccer rules, football, like...
Football doesn't sit in that. Well, I never did that. It was like hockey and round madness. Like, yes.
Wait, so what? So you do have physical education teachers.
So at the moment, that's what it's like for us here.
That's mad.
We need to be skilled in all of those sports to a high level to be able to teach it and deliver it to the kids so that they can access it at GCSE if that's the case.
Mm. Is football on that now?
Football for us here, football's on
here?
That. Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't, never used to be, and it wasn't an option for me in school.
Football's on there. It's the first sport of the year, September, autumn term. We extended it recently, actually. We said, look, let's have them rather than just doing it for 5 weeks. We trialled it last year. We did it for a whole term. So September, October, for the whole of autumn term, because just to consolidate the skills, because we're unfortunate, we have them for 1 hour a week and they have 1 hour dance. That's another issue that some schools face. They have 1 hour P, 1 hour dance. So we said, look, 1 hour a week for 5 weeks, they're not going to take anything away. You have to end up reteaching the whole thing again in year eight because they haven't consolidated much.
Oh, right.
It takes 12 weeks, no? But that ought to be, well, when I was doing my coaching within schools, they were saying, and even so, you'd have to go back over it the following week and continue that kind of, but it's this one skill that took that long. We wouldn't be able to go in and say, for example, do running with the ball 1 week, I don't know, receiving and passing and receiving. So you'd have to do that running with the ball for at least minimum 6 weeks for them to get that skill.
Can't you give them homework? Be like, run with the ball every single day at home?
We try that. But,
even the terminology is different.
That would be good homework, right?
That's the question. You know what, Bex? Even terminology, like football terminology in school and how you have to deliver that is different to football terminology completely. Like I'm saying running with the ball, we don't really talk about that. It's like dribbling or whatever.
Right.
Like sending and receiving. It's not, it's passing, right?
Yeah.
So the language is different when you're, I don't know if you're the same here, but I know when I had to go into schools.
Yep.
My terminology would have to change.
100%, absolutely,
And I think just to add, all of this is almost looking at, I guess, different pathways to, I guess, girls accessing the sport and maybe going on to competition and to elite level. So I guess the next question is, if they don't have a teacher who's interested, how do they get that representation? I know there's a lot talked about representation of the Lionesses in the summer and what that looks at.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a cross-section here of your girls out of 900, and it looks extremely diverse. And if this is what we're getting from an inner city London school, and we're not seeing that transitioning into our Lioness teams, what can we do, or what's your thoughts in terms of that representation?
Yeah, unfortunately, my initial thought on that comment is that the gap, I'm frightened that the gap is getting bigger in terms of a diverse mix of girls accessing the sport at elite level, just because, number one, distance. We've got a year 11 student here who, fortunately, my links with the men's game, boys' youth game, was able to get her up to Chelsea for a trial. And it's just so far. I mean, luckily, she's a two-parent family home, so she's got support to get there. But, you know, take that out of the equation and it's a single-parent home, which a lot of our kids, you know, are facing that situation. They just wouldn't be able to get there. So the distance is an issue. And then the other issue is obviously the cost as well. Mm. So unfortunately for her, where she's at Cobham Development, I think they call it.
That's where I come from. The small, it's far, right?
Yeah, Cobham is far. Yeah, it's up in the sticks, I say.
That's where I come today.
And she's like, they train at a private school. Yeah, it's up in the sticks. And I think she's training up there maybe once or twice a week at a private school. I forget the name of the private school. ACS, private school.
Right.
But she's got to pay for that, you know. For me, that I feel like that's just a barrier, another barrier. Prior to that, I got on the minibus, our school minibus, and I took, a couple of years back, I took three girls up there to Cobham for a trial about four or five years ago. And they've got the fundamentals, the athleticism, competitiveness, but they lack technical skill because they don't have that. I think it's 10,000 touches you meant to get.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that. And it comes back to the grassroots, you know, schools not opening up the gates, pitches at lunchtimes for them to play, or it's not on the curriculum. So unfortunately, that's my opinion on that. And I'm wary that gap is getting wider, because when they do get there, you know, they just don't, they're not on par with the girls that are up there, because they live close to the vicinity in Cobham and all those other areas. Mm. So they're able to go there twice a week, etc., and get access to the sport. Mm-hmm. And our girls down here, just, I think they don't get enough, so that when they get there, they're sort of, you know, you're not on the same.
I was saying that, like, definitely our sport in terms of football with the class, mm-hmm, is changing.
Yeah.
So like, I'm going back to when I grew up, and no way would I be able to access football now. When I look at it from my background,
you're growing up, like where socioeconomic, everything, class, like money,
getting there, financial, yeah, one parent family, four sport, kids. Right? Yeah. The sport's changing from like a working class to, like, as you say, middle class,
yep,
sport, gotcha, which is crazy. And all of these kids that we're looking at now are missing out. I would have been one of these kids in a city, London, that wouldn't get. It's not. I'm sure they're not getting the opportunity that I got. We had youth clubs. We had schools that would open gates at the, you know, after school, where you can go in and use their facilities. I mean, I don't know if your school has that access, but we're limiting access. Youth clubs. I don't see any youth clubs nowadays. Mm. But they all had facilities for me to go and play football. Mm.
Just to play. Without a coach.
I lived in the cage. Me too.
Literally, yeah. I lived in the cage. Yeah.
What was your address?
My sister bashes me every day now for it. She said, he was never at home doing any of the chores.
Yeah,
he was always at a football pitch.
Yeah.
But your school then,
so did they open, like, you talk about the new facilities, did they open it up for kids to come back to out of school hours, or?
Unfortunately, like, we want it open at lunchtime, but unfortunately it's not at the moment because of staffing issues. After school, yes.
And does it need to be staffed?
Yes.
Technically, yes, for it does. Yeah.
For safeguarding.
See, I also think all that safeguarding is now an issue within sport. Mm-hmm, like, I coach or coached at academies, and parents have to sign kids in and out.
Yeah.
Now, my mum wasn't coming with me.
Yeah.
So, in terms of, and you're not allowed somebody else's parent to sign you in and out. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, again, there's another barrier for some kids that would use public transport to get to facilities.
Yeah.
That's another barrier, right?
So, arguably, it's more professional and more safe for kids.
So, it's becoming more middle class. More it's becoming taken away from what street kids would need to access sport.
Kashana, can I ask, because you mentioned, like, you grew up in the cages. How did you get into teaching then? Like, you were playing, obviously, and then you play. Where did you play? How did you play?
Yeah, so that's how I met Urfa. I think I met Urfa first at Charlton.
Correct.
I was fortunate enough to play there. I don't know what the coach saw in me, but I was grateful for the opportunity, you know, to rub shoulders with people like the likes of Urfa, and I was fortunate enough to play with, like, I think Casey and Annie. They were also
Casey
in the team.
Yeah.
Casey
Stoney,
Carmen, the team. So it was great.
Carmen there then. Yeah. Carmen Walker. Carmen
was there. Yep, yep. So great experience for me. And then, so that's literally, we were there for, I think I was there for a year.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that year, the men's team folded, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And then the funds for the women's team cut. And so, with other responsibilities, I think I had my daughter at that time. So I decided to just, you know, leave. I think I was maybe 20. I came to football late, actually, about 25 years old. So I decided to leave football anyway and just focus on work and family. And then I went into football coaching. I worked for David Beckham's Football Academy.
Sorry to just. She's probably being serious. She's actually being serious.
One of the girls just freaked out.
So I was there for 5 years.
No, you stole my name. I know Bex. Yeah,
Working alongside Urfa again. We both worked there.
I followed Bex there.
Yeah.
A few of you. Casey as well, right? Casey was there as well.
Casey Stoney. Yeah. Oh, okay. So he's now at San Diego Wave.
Yeah, so it's all this stuff in terms of, like, when back then you had to have another job. So everyone used to do their coaching badges so that they were qualified to have some income. And our manager worked at the Beckham Academy as well, so was allowed to have that sort of pipeline. And I think, like, similar to where Vic at Arsenal worked for the men's team, and the girls were working the laundry because he worked, and
the turnstiles, the £10,
like, exactly. So it was just about making a living in it alongside, obviously, that passion and hobby of wanting to play. And I think just one last thing that I wanted to touch on before we moved on is, we talked about the sort of diversity in terms of players. What about the mindset? What about the lived experience? What about the culture of the settings where players go? Is that important to have that sort of understanding of intersectionality and that sort of thing, not having that groupthink? Does that have an impact?
Yeah, 100%. You know, your environment, it says a lot. It makes a big difference, doesn't it? And that for a lot of these girls from inner city London, you know, or wherever it might be, inner city areas, they're coming out of their comfort zone of what they know and what they're used to. So when they go into a brand new environment, you know, they need to see people that kind of look like them, or people that understand them, represent them, you know, for them to feel comfortable.
Hold up. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In that environment and thrive.
Even sounding, like, for example, me and Farah was at Parliament yesterday, and like there was people who looked like me but spoke like maybe how a politician spoke, and she was like, oh my gosh, why does she speak like that? Because she doesn't expect her to sound that way. But I'm like, do these girls have to change their characteristics?
The reason why I say that, though, it's not just, I didn't say that because I'm looking, but then it's when the camera say is off, and then you go back to who you are. So it's like I was saying to Eartha, like Eartha can adapt in many situations, so she can go into many different environments, where she comes in here, you see now she's with the girls, right? Because that's her, that's her background, that's where she grew up. But then she can go into like an FA board meeting, and all of a sudden she can change her, whereas I was saying I don't even consider changing how I sound, look, whatever. I'm just like, whatever, that's me. So I'm like, you really consider that? And then obviously she was talking about the bias behind skin colour, etc. Whereas I've probably never even thought of it. Which is madness.
And it's a thing that is evident in society, isn't it? Unfortunately. And back to Eartha's question, I think absolutely, if you haven't got the right character, I think character is what's going to keep any young player in a club. You know, you've got to have thick skin, I say, to be able to get through when you're in an environment where it's not your normal habitat. And you have to have like that steel mentality, otherwise you crumble. So, you know, the coaching environments that in the first place to get them there needs to be of that nature where it gets them ready for that environment. But until you're there, I guess you don't really know, do you? You could do all the prep you want, but...
Yeah, it's an interesting journey, isn't it? Because I think when you first start out, I don't know, you guys might have an opinion on this later. I'd love to hear what you think. But you want to be in an environment where you feel like you belong and you feel like people are like you, sound like you, talk like you, act like you. You know, because we're a little bit more comfortable at these ages when we're developing to be around girls that we like, right? But then as you get in later in your career, you know, when I moved to Germany, I didn't understand a word they were saying. You know, I thought they were really mean. You know, the first English I heard in one of the first trainings, they're all speaking German. One girl came up to me and she said, "You are too slow." I was like, oh, great. This is going to be fun experience, you know, going from America and Sweden where they're happy and smiley to like the Germans who are super serious. So, you know, you do along your career, I think, hit those points where you do have to have that resilience. But early on, it's a little bit harder, I would imagine. But maybe we can ask the girls as well. But is that your experience as well?
Yeah, I think, like I said, it's down to character. I've got a character mindset. It's hard for me to sometimes look outside of that and see it from others' perspectives. But if I got a goal, I'm just going to get it. Nothing's going to stand in my way. Nice. But not everyone's got that mentality, you know. Regardless of my environment, I'm just going to get on with you because I have to get on with you. If it's that case, because that's my goal. Do you know what I mean?
Do you find that your girls have that grit, that they're determined to get the bag or whatever it is that they want to go for in terms of their career? Do they have that fight in them?
They're getting there.
All right, we've got some work to do.
Still got work to do.
Definitely. Okay, I think just lastly before we go on to our halftime team talk, I think we touched on like potential barriers, and obviously we've got great initiatives such as the biggest ever, I was going to say soccer game then, football session.
Don't even.
happening tomorrow. But for me, it's I always like to even take a step further back in terms of looking at what are potential barriers. And I know we've done a lot of work around sports bras, and actually before they're even getting to play and enjoying the sport, they have to be resourced to even be able to move properly so that actually they can enjoy the activity of whatever it is that we're going to do. So this amazing group today, I want to make sure that before we leave here, they all get gifted with a personally fitted sports bra, courtesy of myself and Nike, that they'll get at the
Eartha tried
of the session,
to tell me that this suitcase she bought was a birthday present for somebody. I'm like, whose birthday? So you're not lucky girls.
We're gonna gift all these girls some sports bras so that they're able to move outside of these sessions as well.
You never lie to me.
You lied to me. Okay, that's what moving on.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up our very, very interesting first half. Thank you so much, Kashana. We really appreciate you allowing us to be here and sharing your girls with us. Thank you so much, Kashana, again. Moving into our halftime team talk, we're going to do a little bit of a football roundup. But first, I want to know how many of you guys know about the Conti Cup final. How many of you girls are sitting here today? Raise your hands. Come on. Really high. 1, 2, 3, 4. So like 4 or 5. So maybe like, I don't know, a third of you, a fourth of you, maybe no. That's really interesting. I think. We had the Continental Cup final and Arsenal beat Chelsea. Who knows?
3-1.
How much? 3-1. I could see Farah squirming in her seat when we read that out. She's a Chelsea fan.
Come on, see?
Who's a Chelsea fan?
Yes.
Who's a Man United fan?
What?
Wow.
That's about...
Where is Manchester you lot from?
Wow.
How about Arsenal? Who's an Arsenal fan? Okay. Yeah. That's about a quarter of you. All right. And then we had Man United beat Leicester 5-1. And Man City beat Tottenham 3-1. And let's just chat quickly about those
games. And Reading beat West Ham 2-1. Are you forgetting that? Guys, come on, my old team.
There you go.
Yeah, big result.
Reading's on a roll. They're doing really well, aren't they? Do you want to kick off with that one then, Far?
No, I just think it's a big result. I think Leicester, if you think about how they come back in a new year, signings they made, they started to pick up points, which meant the gap between themselves and Reading was getting closer. So Reading were then fighting a little bit of relegation. I think this 3 points against West Ham certainly pulls them away from that drop zone a little bit more. Big result. They were a goal down as well. And the winning goal by Rachel Rowe, if you haven't seen it, you need to go onto the Barclays Instagram and have a look. It's a fantastic strike. And something that Reading, I guess, in the past have been used to seeing with her, probably hasn't produced it enough this season. But a fantastic goal. So yeah, big 3 points for them.
And then let's get into the Conti Cup final, because you were there, Farah. Arsenal looked like they actually believed they were going to win for the first time in a while against a top team, I would say.
Are you laughing? I'm so happy. I'm smiling. Look at your smile. You never smiled like that before.
I know, but I messaged you before the game, right? And I said, Arsenal are going to upset.
You know what the problem is? And the same happened last season. Chelsea are so used to winning, right? It was like they went 1-0 up after a minute and a half. Mm. So we're 90 seconds into a game, 1-0. They probably could have scored a couple of minutes later. The game looked as if it was going to be easy. And then Arsenal found a way back into it. Mm. And Chelsea looked like they would. As Emma said at the end of the game, I think I agree with her. Chelsea look like a team that have won too many trophies and it never meant anything to them. Mm. Arsenal look like a team that haven't won a trophy in 4 years and they were hungry to get silverware. Mm. And they played like that. And that first 45 is probably, take out the Lyon game in the Champions League, probably the best game they've played all season.
Yep.
So on the day, they totally deserved it. And it was horrible as a Chelsea fan to watch.
How do you stop that? How do you stop that as someone who's so hungry in terms of wanting to be the best at the top of your game?
Never won that many trophies.
No. But I'm just saying, in terms of like, but I'm saying maybe you've never won trophies, but even when we're playing like in training or just like nonsense games, that you're still hungry to win and have that desire. But I think for me that's a little bit of an excuse of not winning, because no matter what, Chelsea always want to win. They want to bring silverware home. And I don't think not
I think the tactics are wrong.
Something's gone wrong.
100%. If you're making changes in your team at 35 minutes, that's telling you that you've started the game wrong, right?
Who did they bring out again? I can't remember who they took out.
I can't remember the subs. They just changed for... Lauren James was not in the game. Mm-hmm. Kankovic come off, didn't she? The number 10 come off, so their 10 come off. They brought Buchanan on at fullback, and then they rotated the system and they brought Lauren James a little bit more central, closer to Sam Kerr, right? But it was too late. And then they conceded like minutes after they made that substitution, 3-1 at half time, the game's dead. Mm. I wouldn't say the players didn't want to win that game. That's wrong of me to say that Chelsea players didn't want to. But I can see what Emma's saying in terms of Arsenal looked hungrier as a team to get silverware, whereas Chelsea didn't. Normally, Chelsea can problem solve. Normally, they can play without the ball. Normally, they can play with the ball. They couldn't do any of the above. Like Sam Kerr, like worked her socks off, but nothing was happening for her other than the goal. Lauren James completely wasn't in the game. And Chelsea and Emma Hayes were trying to find a way to get her in. And they just wasn't able to.
Yeah, so I guess for me, like, how many different ways?
You're not just grilling me because I'm Chelsea. Don't want
to
come.
I'm asking. I'm interested. I'm interested to know because obviously Arsenal and Chelsea have played each other so many different times,
and literally the 1 week earlier,
literally. So they're reading. Oh, if this happens, they change up to this. If this happens, they change. So finally, they're saying anything that they do in terms of changing it up. We're going to be ready and prepared for it. We've just got to be on our game because obviously the caliber of players are really good. But what we haven't done is we haven't performed really well. So if we turn up on the day as well as doing what we know we need to do in terms of defensively against their tactics, we'll come up on top. So, and I think that's why I had that feeling that Arsenal were going to win, and they'd seen enough of Chelsea. Like, there wasn't much more that
Chelsea
could do.
Let's be honest, all three games they've played, the draw, The Chelsea win last weekend, and then obviously Arsenal have been better in all three games. Chelsea have been more efficient. So the difference between the two teams isn't what the game looked like. So on the eye, if you'd have seen it without a result, you'd have probably said Arsenal would have won all three of them. But they didn't. They had no efficiency. They created the most chance, dominated possession, dominated chances, but Chelsea always come out on top. Because of the mentality and the know-how. Chelsea have a better know-how to win than what Arsenal do. Arsenal were more efficient in this game. They were.
I think they also just have better goal scorers.
Who?
Arsenal. Chelsea. Because if you look at Blackstenia, she's still quite young. And she's still fairly new into the... She's a great striker. I've seen her grow up since she was in the under-20s in Papua New Guinea. And she was like head and shoulders way better than many, many strikers at her age then. But she's still fresh into the league. She's still finding her feet. Like you said, she still got almost transferred in that deal with Alessia Russo. But she scored, you know, and I think you need to actually be able to be clinical and just put the ball in the back of the net. And Sam Kerr, for example, you know, some days she works hard, some days she doesn't, but she finds a way to score most of the time.
I'm looking at Arsenal, like Katie McCabe, she was hit double figures last year. Caitlin Ford, same. She's already on 7 this year, Caitlin Ford. Then you look at Kim Little, always scores from midfield. Freedom Arnhem, how many, she won a goal. So if you look at that Arsenal attack in terms of where goals come from, they probably have a lot more than where the goals come from Chelsea.
Just not against Chelsea.
Sam Kerr, like she scores, but you know, Lauren James has scored a couple, but she's not consistent with that. Evan Cuthbert now and then. So in terms of the attack, probably Arsenal.
And if you look sort of just at the table now, Chelsea and Arsenal are sitting at 12 games played, and Man City and Man United have 14. So they're above. So it's Man United with 35 points, Man City with 32. But then Chelsea and Arsenal still have two games in hand. And if Chelsea were to win those games, they would be at the top of the table, and Arsenal would be sitting around second, tied for second with Man City. So really, Chelsea's in a much better position for that. But even if they do win the league, it still means that they can't win the quadruple, which was, I guess, same what Emma Hayes was looking at, right?
It's the same as last year. It's a repeat. Literally, last year, they opened the season up, lost 3-2 to Arsenal. This year, they opened the season up and lost to Liverpool 2-1, right? They lost the Conte Cup last season at the same time to Man City. They lost the Conte Cup this year to Arsenal. They'll probably go on and win the FA Cup, the league, and then potentially see how far they can get in Champions League. So it's the same. It's a repeat season for them.
Which begs the question, right? Like, Emma Hayes, good coach. Like,
just about to say.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, in terms of that leadership, I think, what does that look like now? We know she's obviously a great manager from the credentials, what she's done. But for me, the focus now has to be Champions League, right? That's the only thing that they haven't won. So for me as a manager, obviously the league, they're most probably going to win that. But it's got to be Champions League out of the other competitions that they're left in that they have to focus on.
And the league is always a fun one too to win, isn't it?
But when you've won it too many times, like her excuse, maybe they're not hungry for it. So maybe it's about
It's kind of embarrassing though to like win the Champions League but not win your domestic league, isn't it? Like that.
I was happy when Chelsea mended it.
Anyway, moving on to the Man United Leicester City, because we were talking about Alessia Russo and the fact that she had scored so few goals this season. And did you guys watch the Women's Euros in the summer? Yes. Did you see Alessia Russo's back heel, that goal? Yeah. Oh, was that one of the best goals you've ever seen? Amazing, right? Well, she's come into the season and she hasn't really scored that many goals. But this past weekend, she had a hat trick. She finally it felt like she could flow. She was playing. She was happy. Any thoughts on that game from you guys?
Yeah, I think there was two hat tricks, weren't there, in Manchester this weekend. So it was great to see that. But yeah, Russo again using her head, using her feet, just showing the caliber of player that she is. And again, not signing a contract as yet. Man United must be thinking, can we keep her? There's going to be teams who are obviously going to be looking to try and get that signature, both I think in the UK and abroad. But yeah, I think she's just keeping her head down, letting her football do the talking, which is all you can really do, and see where that takes her. And I think she's not going to be shy of a few offers in terms of teams who want to sign her. So hopefully she stays a Red as a Man United fan, but we know she's lived close to Arsenal and grew up there, so that's also a possibility.
Or even abroad, maybe. Do you think she has in her contract, because it's not, you know, it's not 100% that Man United might qualify for Champions League, that they have to qualify to be able to keep her? I mean,
she's,
if you're a caliber,
she can walk away.
Yeah.
She can walk away. I to be fair, I think if they go Champions League, that might give them half a chance of keeping her. Look, they're close to winning the league. I reckon they're up there. They could. Why are you looking at me like
I'm
that for?
I want to look at you.
They could potentially win the league, but I think Chelsea will, because I think, as I say, Chelsea know how, that mentality. I think Man United are getting closer to that. I still think they're a bit away.
Yeah.
But the way they're finishing off teams, they have every chance. As I say, it might be a thing where she wants to come back to London. That could be something that, you know, sways her towards coming, if it be Arsenal.
Because London's cool, right?
Obviously. It's the hub.
And then, go ahead, Man City, Tottenham.
Say, Bonnie Shaw back on it. Like, literally.
Hat-trick.
She is representing Jamaica, like, to the fullest.
The whole of the Caribbean at this point.
She's just come to England and just taken over. She's moving like Notting Hill Carnival in the league. I promise you. Like, she's just moving mad. Like, but no, I love it for her. I love it for City. They had, a special kit that they were wearing as well, in terms of International Women's Week as well. Yeah, well
done. And
the men wore the same. But yeah, the football, the like we said, in terms of City again. Tottenham, I don't know. I know Farrah was saying something, but yeah, Tottenham are not doing well when they're sliding further down the table.
Bottom or
third
something.
Bottom.
They are third bottom.
And Brighton has two games
because
in
these
there.
Two at the beginning of the season, we got asked who would finish in the top three.
Here we go again. They've heard it every single episode.
These two donut next to me, right, said Tottenham will finish third. They are third bottom. upside down, split the league.
That's what I said.
Exactly what was meant.
You know,
because
Farrah talks so much, she didn't allow me to say bottom. I said third, and then she was like, I was going to say bottom, but great to see in terms of Khadija Shaw getting those goals, and maybe having that striker training.
But really, what is going on with Tottenham?
That's my question from last week
on
too. Huge surprise. Huge
surprise. They spent so much money. Record fee for
they've got all their players coming back.
I mean, listen, the fixtures they've had Chelsea, Arsenal, now Manchester City, so they've had a tough run of games.
Yeah.
But come on.
Look, I saw them play in the...
You team.
I watched them play at home in the men's stadium in Tottenham. And they were good. Yeah. They were really good against Man United. And live, it was great to watch them because I wanted to know the same. Like, what is actually happening? But they had good movement. They played together as a team. They fought really hard. They just had a few gaps, you know, where they weren't... There's clearly some standout players. And then there's clearly some players that aren't in that top caliber. And I think where they have those holes, they really suffer. They really bleed.
Who's the winners in the team?
Drew Spence.
Okay.
Fact. Zdorsky. I think Zdorsky's the...
Okay. Really? Oh, yeah.
She's solid. She's a solid back.
Who else?
Neville. Neville is genuinely. She's one of the...
Who's a good player. Who's the winners? Who's people who've got experience of winning? She's just come in.
Yeah, she's
brand
just
new.
That's it.
So
we've
got three players who are winners.
Yeah. So mentality,
we talk about the mentality, we talk about the drive.
Why didn't you consider that when you made your opinion at the beginning of the season?
Well, we have Percival got injured.
Yeah, we're looking at, so when you're asking the question, Bex, about...
I think we should just skip over that topic. I think I'm done with that.
So in summary, I don't think there's enough winners, not enough people that have experience of winning.
That makes sense.
And that could be the proof in the pudding in terms of that. Yes, they've brought some players in, but as a manager, when you give those instructions, actually once they cross the line, who is going to take that by the scruff of the neck and deliver it? And I don't think that they've got that in the personnel in terms of that next level of leadership. They've got good players and talented players, but to go and deliver and execute, they need some more time.
It's a good point. All right, well, that wraps up our Boots, Balls, and Bras episode for today. Thank you, Kashana, and all of the girls at the Harris Academy, Bermondsey, for that. And don't forget to listen out for tomorrow's International Women's Day Q&A with the girls here. Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.